It's 5:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. In just a few minutes, Senator Ron Johnson joins the show. He's been in the news for his comments on U.S. efforts against ISIS and on Ebola policy. We'll hear what he has to say.
First, we continue our new series on the issues in the race for governor. Governor Scott Walker and his challenger Mary Burke disagree on a lot of issues, including school funding. As Kristen Durst reports, the issue is especially important in Wisconsin's rural districts.
There are 340 students enrolled in the school district of Potosi, a community in far southwestern Wisconsin near the Mississippi River. The town has a successful and growing brewery, but Superintendent Ron Sari says business-wise, there's not much else.
We really have no major industries. We're a bedroom community for the most part. A lot of the people who work travel and commute to Dubuque or else Platteville, some possibly to Lancaster.
Schools in small rural towns across Wisconsin are struggling. Enrollment is declining, poverty is rising, and transportation costs are considerable. Jerry Feeney is the executive director of the Wisconsin Rural Schools Alliance.
Really, for the last 20 years since the revenue limits went into effect, rural schools have been faced with significant challenges in being able to maintain the programs and offerings that they're providing for their students.
The current school funding formula places a lot of emphasis on enrollment and property values. So when rural districts lose students, they lose money. Feeney says often the only good choice they have is to appeal directly to local taxpayers.
Over the past 10 years, there have been nearly 1,000 referenda to exceed the revenue limit. And of those, 80% are rural school districts.
Lawmakers so far have avoided the issue. That's because it would likely require investing a lot more money or taking money from wealthier districts. And that's politically unpopular. Governor Scott Walker says both sides are to blame for not addressing the problem.
That's an issue that for years Democrat and Republican alike people have talked about but haven't been able to take on the old school aid formula.
Walker's campaign is largely focused on expanding state funding for private voucher schools, and he's not saying how much money he'd be willing to provide for public education. However, Walker says his next budget, if elected, would include more focused aid for rural schools, as recommended by a legislative task force convened last year.
We're going to build off of that and incorporate it in our budget to try and give more attention not only for transportation costs, but for distance learning costs and other things that offset some of the challenges that rural schools have across the state.
His challenger, Democrat Mary Burke, says she wants to remake Wisconsin's school funding formula to help rural schools if the budget allows. She's also not saying how much money she would give public schools, only saying that she would prioritize funding for K-12 public education.
What I want to do as we, certainly hopefully as we grow the economy and we get in better shape, that we're able to put more money into K-12 education, which if you're doing it, then that's the best time to change the funding formula because you're not taking from one district and putting it in another district.
Back in Potosi, Superintendent Sari says their 1950s school building is aging and needs attention. He says they've been surveying members of the community, asking them questions like, do you want our school to continue to exist? He says some people are worried.
When a school shuts down in a town like Potosi, they say that the town kind of goes dead. The school is seen as the heart of the community.
Sari says his district is trying to provide the best education they can with the resources available. But he says as state aid continues to decrease, that is becoming more and more difficult. Kristen Durst, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Two major international stories are hitting home here in the U.S. this week, with ongoing efforts against ISIS in the Middle East and growing concern over the Ebola outbreak in West Africa and cases of the transmission of the disease to healthcare workers in Texas.
Wisconsin's U.S. Senator Ron Johnson has been in the news talking about both those issues, and he joins us now. Senator Johnson, welcome back to the show.
Hello, Veronica. Hello, Rob. How are you guys doing?
Good, thank you. Well, you've been critical of the Obama administration's approach to combating ISIS in the past, but you have spoken favorably about the current plan using airstrikes to support the Iraqi army, Kurdish fighters, and moderate Syrian rebels. Do you think that strategy will work to degrade and destroy ISIS?
No, the evidence is that it's not working. I supported it, and I agree with the goal that President Obama stated, which is to degrade and ultimately destroy ISIS. I think we need to ultimately destroy Islamic terrorists. But President Obama made a blunder when he announced the goal in taking off the very actions that are probably going to be necessary to achieve that goal. And the evidence I use, I'm not a military expert, but just take a look at history. In 2007, in order to defeat 6,000 to 8,000 members of al-Qaeda in Iraq, we had 100,000 Sunnis working with over 100,000 Iraqi security forces. America had 160,000 Americans in Iraq. About 35,000 to 40,000 of those military members were engaged in direct combat in the clear and hold strategy to defeat 6,000 to 8,000 members of al-Qaeda in Iraq. Now, we have over 30,000 members of ISIS that are better equipped, better trained, better resourced. They're a far greater threat, and we've got 1,500 apparently advisors, and the coalition is not growing because America's not providing the kind of leadership, and the bombing campaign isn't even containing ISIS, much less beginning the degradation process, and we are a long ways from defeating or destroying ISIS. So, unfortunately, that strategy is not working.
Now, you've said on this show, in fact, in the past, that you'd be open to sending American ground troops to Iraq to fight ISIS. And based on where we are now, do you think that's necessary, considering you've just said that the airstrikes don't seem to be getting the job done?
I think it is necessary because what are we going to do, continue to let ISIS roll up territory, take over more cities, massacre more people? I believe it was another blunder on President Obama's part not to leave a stabilizing force of the 20,000 to 24,000 military personnel is what the generals recommended at the time to leave a stabilizing force behind Iraq. Had we done that, we wouldn't be faced with this the current disaster that's on our hands. So if you agree with President Obama's stated objective, if you believe, and I do believe, that ISIS represents a clear and present danger to our country, we don't have a choice as to whether or not we're going to be at war with Islamic terror. They made that choice for us back as early as 1993 when they first started to attempt to bring down the Twin Towers. Our only choice, our only decision is how are we going to fight that war? Are we going to be on the defense? Are we going to fight it here on the streets of America? Or are we going to go on offense? And how robust is that offense going to be? Are we going to treat it like a hornet's nest we take out? Or are we just going to poke that hornet's nest with a stick for a few years and just allow the threat to hang over our heads?
Now, what you're describing has all the earmarks of being a long haul. Do you think the American people support the idea of sending ground troops back to Iraq so soon after the last intervention?
Are we going to wait and have terrorists attack us here in America? This is going to be a long-term struggle. Islamic terrorists have been at war with the West and America for more than 20 years. We buried our head in the sand in the 90s, and the result was thousands of Americans were slaughtered in 9/11, when they did finally bring down the Twin Towers. So, again, nobody relishes war. I wish we didn't have to worry about Islamic terrorists, but we do, and we ignore that threat at our own peril.
I want to ask you about a study that was out this week. In fact, it was an internal report by the CIA, which says that arming rebels rarely works. We're still using that technique with Syria right now, with Syrian rebels. Should the U.S. stop using that tactic?
Well, I don't believe it will work. I mean, the most we're able to train is maybe 5,000 Syrian moderates, and that won't occur for a year. What will 5,000 Syrian moderates be able to do against 30,000 members of ISIS? And by the way, those numbers are growing because as ISIS continues to have success, as we continue not to be able to contain them, they're successfully recruiting off the internet, and success breeds success from that standpoint. So, they're just gaining strength. They're not being degraded. So, arming rebels simply is not going to be sufficient to achieve the goal that President Obama set, and the goal that I agree with is we got to defeat these guys. You cannot negotiate with people that behead other human beings, that crucify people, that engage in mass executions, and what they do to women. I don't even want to describe it on the radio. It is horrific. It is barbaric. You can't negotiate with those people. You have to defeat them.
I want to get a caller in on this. We're going to take one from Willem in Colfax. Hi, Willem.
Hello. We've already spent, by the time we get it paid off, maybe $1 trillion or more trying to turn Iraq into a democratic society, and I don't think that worked very well. And I was just wondering how much the senator often speaks of a fiscal responsibility, how much money and how many lives, American lives, is he willing to commit to this endless battle? And I think the comment about fighting Islamic terrorists on the streets of America is the biggest fear-mongering I think I've ever heard. I think that's absurd. To think that's going to happen.
All right. Thank you for that call, Willem. Do you see it in that frame, Senator Johnson, between fiscal responsibility and national security?
No, I think you can be penny-wise and pound-foolish if we just sit and bury our heads in the sand. The fact of the matter is, whether you agree whether we should have ever gone into Iraq, we had won the war. President Obama lost the peace. We had a largely stable Iraq. Now, it was a very fragile coalition. Shia did not trust Sunni. Sunni did not trust Shia. And so the glue that would hold that coalition, that would bind that coalition, keep it together, really was an American military presence. But President Obama decided to bug out. He did not leave the stabilizing force. He didn't learn the lessons of history like we didn't leave a stabilizing force behind like we did in Germany and Japan and South Korea. Look at how successful those nations turned out, because America, as President Obama himself has now admitted, is the indispensable nation. And when we bug out, when we don't provide the kind of leadership that the world requires, vacuums and voids of leadership occur, and very bad things fill those voids. And so we did sacrifice greatly, and we have spent close to $1 trillion, and 4,500 brave Americans, 32,000 were injured in that war. President Obama wasted that sacrifice. He frittered it away, and it's a real tragedy. It's a real shame, but now we have a worse situation, but it's a situation we can't ignore.
Now, you have expressed satisfaction with the partnership of five Arab nations joining the United States effort to stop ISIS. So do you feel good at least about the coalition building that may be going on?
Listen, I was supportive when President Obama finally decided to act and engage in some airstrikes. But that was a number of weeks ago, and the facts on the ground, the reality of the situation is it didn't work. It was a good sign that Arab nations were willing to publicly support the coalition efforts. But and this is a real problem for President Obama. I don't envy him his task. The real conundrum is, if America leads too much, the Arab states will once again sit back and go, okay, let's let America do all the work. Let's let them do the heavy lifting. But if we don't lead enough, and that's what's happening right now, we're not providing the type of leadership. We've taken certain actions off the ground, so our coalition partners also are not engaging and are not committing the way they need to be committed. So this is not easy. But it's going to require American leadership, and we really are not providing the leadership to the extent that we will need to in order to assemble the coalition. And the template that I've certainly spoke to coalition partners when I was in New York during the UN General Assembly is I used the first Iraq War, when America provided 2/3 of the troops, a little under 500,000 Americans served in that effort, but our coalition partners provided close to 250,000. That war effort cost $61 billion. America paid for $9 billion, about 15%. Arab states actually provided about 50% of the funding for the first Gulf War. That was the example. That was the template. That is what we should be trying to achieve in this coalition.
We're talking right now with Ron Johnson, U.S. Senator from Wisconsin, getting his thoughts on U.S. efforts in Iraq and Syria and the American reaction to Ebola. We'll be talking about that coming up.
Join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. Should the U.S. have acted sooner to support moderate rebels in Syria? Should we continue the campaign of airstrikes against ISIS? And turning to Ebola, should we have stronger travel restrictions for countries facing major Ebola outbreaks? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We continue our conversation now with U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, talking about U.S. efforts against ISIS in Iraq and Syria, as well as reactions to the ongoing news about Ebola in the United States.
You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions for the senator and your comments. Do you support the use of airstrikes against ISIS? Should ground troops be on or off the table? And when it comes to Ebola, would you support travel restrictions from affected countries? What do you think of the U.S. response? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Senator Johnson, turning to Ebola now. Now, you've called for travel restrictions from West African countries affected by the disease. What kind of restrictions are you hoping for?
Well, certainly we need to allow aid workers and health workers to, you know, travel back and forth from West Africa so that we can try and contain the disease there. I'm fully supportive of President Obama using our military construction workers to build the isolation units and the medical facilities to try and contain it in West Africa. That's our first line of defense. And so obviously those individuals have to travel back and forth. Now, we probably ought to take precautions in terms of isolation, making sure that that there are isolation and, if necessary, quarantines for the incubation period so that people that have been in West Africa aren't free to roam around and potentially infect people here in America and let that get out of control. And I really see no reason for citizens of those countries to freely travel between our nations. And once again, if they want to come to America, they should be isolated for 21 days before they travel here. So I think that's a reasonable precaution. I'd rather be safe than sorry.
Now, the head of the CDC just today, Thomas Frieden, has said that it's better to know the travelers that are coming into your country rather than having them try to slip through into the country undetected, that ultimately is safer when it comes to keeping Ebola out of America. What do you say to that?
I just don't think it makes any sense. And he's also saying that a travel ban would risk a greater exposure, greater spread of the disease. I just don't. That makes no sense. It doesn't make sense to many Americans. Other African nations have instituted a strict travel ban, and they are Ebola-free. We have a case of Ebola. Now, we have a couple cases of Ebola, and unfortunately, the CDC simply has not been credible. It just doesn't make sense what they're saying, and their bland assurances are proving false, and so they've really lost the confidence of the American public, and that's a real shame. We really need a strong CDC and National Institute of Health to protect our public health, and right now Americans are losing confidence in those bland assurances.
The CDC has been sharply criticized in recent weeks. Critics of yours have said that you were on board with cutting funding to the CDC through federal budget cuts. How do you respond to that?
Well, first of all, it's simply not true, and what the CDC needs to do is prioritize spending. You know, I'm starting to see reports of different agencies within the CDC where they spend, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars more on just nonsense grants, funding nonsense research, and they only spend somewhere between $13 and $35 million on looking for cures and vaccines for Ebola. So I think it's not a matter of not enough funding, it's a matter of prioritization of spending within the CDC. And that's just a problem with government in general.
Let's take a call now. David is with us in Burlington. Hi, David.
Hi, thank you very much for having the show. Thanks, Senator Johnson. Appreciate that. One comment and one question. The comment is that we're 2 months too late in having restrictions from people traveling from countries with Ebola that should have been in place a long time ago, obviously. Now, the other one is let's look 6 months down the road, and let's say we have 5,000 cases of Ebola in America. What is going to be put in place to have containment and restrictions here in the United States if that were to occur?
Okay, thank you, David. Senator Johnson?
Well, first of all, let's hope it doesn't get that far out of control. And I really do believe the CDC is learning some lessons. But, you know, I just want listeners to just imagine yourself. Let's say you have the funds and to travel, and you're in West Africa, and you tragically come in contact with an Ebola patient. What is the first thing you're going to do? I mean, I'm going to try and hop a flight and get to America where I could potentially be treated in a hospital that might save my life. And so that basic human tendency is exactly what we have to defend ourselves against. And what this administration is doing is they're taking people's temperature, which, by the way, if you're in that position, you're going to travel well before the 21-day incubation period before you're going to show symptoms. And you cannot rely on people to honestly answer questions that would, you know, really prevent them from getting on that flight. So, you know, you have to understand basic human nature. You got to recognize that reality, and you have to put the procedures and protocols in place to defend America. And that really is travel restrictions, some selective travel bans. You got to get serious about this, and this administration just is not taking the decisive action to protect America.
Now, Congressman Reed Ribble today issued a press release calling for an emergency session of Congress to deal with Ebola. Briefly, getting close to our time together here, but would you support that idea?
Absolutely. I actually spoke with Chairman Carper, who's the chairman of the Homeland Security Committee, which I serve on, and I talked to him last night, or was it two nights ago, asking him to hold a hearing. And again, not as a show trial, but to really be able to ask administration officials, officials of the CDC and the NIH, you know, the appropriate questions, the questions that Americans want to know. I mean, it still boggles my mind that the government has not told us exactly how those nurses became infected. What was the breach in protocol? What was the protective wear? You know, what protective measures did they take? You know, it is unbelievable to me that they weren't in full, you know, protective gear, that there was any areas of their bodies that were exposed. I mean, we've all seen Ebola in Africa. We've seen the health workers fully clothed.
And I'm sorry, we have to leave it there. We're out of time. Senator Johnson, thank you so much for joining us.
Have a great day.
That was Senator Johnson, U.S. Senator from Wisconsin.